and they've all been very successful. The requirement to do a design build says that it has to have a payback of 35 years or less, as defined in the Public Utilities Code. We are proposing a energy services contract. It's called an ESCO, an award to Aircon. We sent out a request for proposals to two known providers. One, Chevron, did not submit a proposal. They considered the job too small. We did get a proposal from Aircon, and we are proposing an award to them as our ESCO. That would be $550,780 as a basic contract. The total project is $603,600, and project administration is estimated at $23,000 with contingencies. We backed into this number. It's roughly 5.5%, $29,820. Funding is primarily federal. Your board had item B27 this morning. You talked about the funding for social services, and it's primarily funding with some state and a very small portion being augmented by the social services budget. We expect this project to have a duration of about 6 months. The requirement under the legislation requires this hearing this morning, and so we are requesting that your board create a new capital improvement project, award the ESCO contract to Aircon in the amount of $550,780.
Thank you, Mr. Leib. I don't see any comments or questions from supervisors. Does anyone from the public wishes to comment on this item? Seeing none, bring it back for a motion.
Move staff recommendation.
Moved by Supervisor Bianchi, seconded by Supervisor Lantol. All those in favor, signify by saying aye, please.
Yes, aye.
Any opposed? Ayes have it. Next item, please. Thank you.
Next item is item H1, and this is a presentation of a report on obesity in the county, the possibility of forming a countywide obesity prevention task force, and evaluate the viability and cost of a county employee wellness program.
Dr. Thomas.
Very much.
Good afternoon, members of the board. Dr. Greg Thomas, let me try and pull up this board presentation. Someone will have to tell me how we get this up on the screen.
It's there.
The clerk will do it.
There we go.
Just like that.
Thank you very much. Okay, we're here to talk about pot bellies. We're not here to talk about pigs. We're actually talking about the human variety. We have four presenters today to talk about childhood obesity prevention. First of all, Amy Gilman is a public health international nutrition specialist. She's working with our Tri-Counties Collaborative on obesity prevention, which we have named Healthy Eating and Active Living, or HEAL, H-E-A-L. So we're trying to heal slow. Dr. Lisa Nicholson is Associate Professor of Nutrition at Cal Poly, and she's also the Director of Didactic Program in Dietetics, which is a mouthful. Dana Ravelin is a nutritionist with the Public Health Department, and Judy Stevens is Director of Food Services in Lucia Marr School District.
Welcome, ladies.
So with that introduction, Amy is going to be our first speaker to introduce the topic and give you some information on impacts and severity.
Yes, good afternoon, members of the board. My name is Amy Gilman, and I live in Paso Robles, but as Dr. Thomas says, I work with the Tri-Counties in San Luis Obispo County on preventing obesity.
And you can bring that microphone up closer to you so you can hear you.
You can hear me?
Thank you.
Thank you. I have notes here, and Greg will help me with the slides. We'd like to share with you from five of us, actually, that we'll be overviewing the situation here in the county, but also we'll be touching on issues and opportunities that have been found so far at homes, in health services, at schools, and at workplaces. So I will start with the county data, but first an overview on body mass index. I'd like to stress, though, first of all, that we do talk about obesity, but in fact our intent is to prevent chronic disease. The underlying issues with that is that it's increasingly understood that lifelong nutritious and appropriately apportioned eating habits and regular physical activity have an important role in disease prevention and in maintaining healthy body weights. Healthy weight is an intermediate outcome associated with healthy living habits and with potential risk factors for disease. Healthy weight can be measured through body mass index, or BMI for short. It's calculated by a person's weight divided by their height squared. And then it's categorized according to the BMI value. A person is then considered underweight, healthy weight, overweight, or obese. These categories were designated, still nervous, due to their associated increasing risk of disease, which is why we focus on overweight and obesity all of the time. But in fact, we're preventing disease. Adult BMI has one reference because we've all attained our adult height. But for children, we use BMI for age because children are constantly growing. Their reference changes by age up to age 19. Their growth reference is also based upon sex, as each sex has differing rates of growth and body fat acquisition. A child's BMI classification is thus determined based on percentile ranking compared to other children of the same age and sex. The BMIs of concern for children are those above the 85th percentile, which indicates at risk of overweight, but also, and most importantly, those above the 95th percentile, which indicates children that are already overweight. To touch on the health consequences of poor diet and physical inactivity, among adults, there's increased risk of cardiovascular disease and high blood pressure, diabetes, some cancers, such as breast and colon cancer, breathing problems like sleep apnea, osteoarthritis, reproductive complications such as gestational diabetes and obstructed labor, and obviously overweight and obesity itself. The Surgeon General estimates that some 300,000 deaths occur annually and may be attributable to obesity and its associated poor health conditions. As we've mentioned, the risk of premature death increases with increasing weight. Even worse, as our children develop unhealthy weights, they too take on adult diseases. There has been a dramatic increase in type 2 diabetes among children, most often among overweight children. Hit the button. most often among overweight children. This has become so serious that the CDC now estimates that 1 in 3 children born in the year 2000 will develop diabetes at some point in their life. Overweight children also increasingly have high cholesterol and high blood pressure. Preventing chronic disease needs to start early, as overweight adolescents are 70 to 80% likely to be overweight or obese as adults. And not only do overweight children face health risks, they face social discrimination. The economic consequences of this epidemic are also heavy. In California alone, for the year 2000, it was calculated that the cost of inactivity, obesity, overweight, totaled just over $21 billion for the year 2000. The percentage of people in the U.S. with unhealthy weights has reached epidemic proportions. This map shows the changes in obese adults, those great with BMIs greater than 30, since 1991, which is the top slide. And it advances, the top map. The bottom map is for 2001. The solid blues are the most easy to see, and those represent the category of 20 to 24% of adults who are obese. We can see that California has advanced to that stage by 2001 and so can no longer be considered one of the healthiest states in the nation. Beautiful San Luis Obispo has also not escaped. According to UCLA's Health Interview Survey for the years 2000 and 2001, 55% of our adults are overweight or obese, 55%. and this is similar to the state rate. On average, about 30% of our school children are at risk of overweight or already overweight, as indicated by the school's term below healthy fitness zone. So they're using a slightly different, say, word language for what is equivalent to above 85th percentile. And this problem in our county, as is similar statewide, is greater among boys and among Latinos. Yet the problem starts even earlier. Our maternal, child, and adolescent health division has found recently that 29% of our county preschoolers, which are children 3 to 5 years old, are already at risk or overweight. And the South County carries the greater burden with 40.2% at risk or overweight. So to conclude this part, on average, according to BMI, 30% of our children are currently at lifelong risk of health problems, and the problem is only expected to grow. So our question is how can we change our children's environments to support and encourage healthy eating and active living?
Hi, thank you very much for this opportunity to speak to you today. Lisa Nicholson, I'm over at Cal Poly with the Nutrition Department. And I'd like to present some of the national research and then some of what I'm finding here in San Luis Obispo in my own research. The first thing, I've got a slide here of our mypyramid.gov. I hope you've all visited the website. We're pretty clear on what we tell people all the time. My focus, my research is on what families do. So we're always telling families what to eat, and that they should exercise more. Eat less, exercise more. We have a fairly consistent message. We have our dietary guidelines describing how to eat right, and we give a lot of examples of what you should do for exercise. Be a role model for your children. Exercise half an hour a day. When we look at the research, what the families tell us, we're hearing a very different message. The first thing is, overwhelmingly, there is a sense of guilt, essentially, on most parents' part. They want to do the right thing. Every parent loves their child. What this national data, the major thing is people's perception. They perceive it as too expensive to eat right. They perceive that they don't have enough time to, and the list goes on and on. Excuse me. They don't have time to cook. They don't have time to eat together. They don't have time to shop correctly. They don't have time to exercise in a given day. There's also a knowledge component. A lot of people say they're not really sure how to cook what they're supposed to cook. A lot of parents aren't sure what amount to serve their children. We serve our children far too much food is one thing we do. And picky eaters, how do you deal with picky eater? That's always an issue. In terms of physical activity, the major things we hear frequently are safety and how do I get my kids to work, to school rather, while I'm on my way to work, the distance, the location of activity. I've recently been doing some research, mainly through the EOC, so with Head Start parents and migrant and seasonal Head Start parents, and we've done a series of focus groups over the last year talking to parents about a whole lot of different things, acculturation issues, attitude, how they feed their children, what keeps them from feeding their children the way they'd like to, and in addition, healthy body weight. Today I'd just like to talk a little bit about the barriers that parents perceive, and it matches the national data. Here in San Luis Obispo, where we have so many fresh fruits and vegetables, the perception is absolutely that it is too expensive to eat lots of fresh fruits and vegetables. I got the response, too tired, from just about every parent group I interviewed. Not enough time, they worked, they picked up the kids, let's eat fast food. I only make what my children will eat. Well, we can teach parents how to encourage children to eat new foods. And they just prepare whatever is in the cupboard that day, that night. There's no time. Especially in the migrant and seasonal groups, we had a lot of traditional food patterns that came up as well. Now, one thing that we were interested in, and in terms of today's discussion, is we asked them to look at these series of silhouettes of children and to choose the ones that they thought might be at risk, or what's a healthy body weight. And pretty much what we saw is that these parents were not concerned with their children's body weights. Even they would choose a slightly higher level as what they would consider normal looking. If they did have health problems, that would increase their likelihood of seeing an issue. But otherwise, they saw health in a smile. They did not see health in being overweight. Excuse me. This series of circles is how I see the individual in the middle of their environment. And I think the bottom line is that we really need to find a way to create ways to make it easy for families to have healthy food choices and to be physically active. If you look down at the bottom in red, we have lots of programs in this county that have education. If you look at the next level up, we have cooperative extension that works with families. We have a lot of fresh vegetables and fruits that are convenient and are affordable, so a lot of it's perception. If you move up from then, our school wellness policies are going to be coming in this year. Businesses looking for wellness, more walkable communities. So as you move out there into the built environment, you get to this final picture. And from my perspective and working in this community, I see it as if all the players are in place, but we can't have a team until there's a captain. These are not coordinated efforts, and yet there's so much going on. So that would be my bottom line, is that what we really need is to coordinate our efforts as a community. Make it easy, make it attainable. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Dana Ravlin. I'm a public health nutritionist with the Public Health Department. And my role here today is to provide you with an update of two of the programs we currently have in place in the health department to address these overweight issues in our specific pediatric community. The first is a program in which I work. It is the Maternal Child and Adolescent Health Program. And about a year ago, we included a objective in our five-year strategic plan that addresses childhood overweight. And our goal is by June 30th of 2009, a lofty goal, we are hoping to decrease the percentage of children who are at risk for overweight or currently overweight in our county by 5%. It is also a shared objective with 38 other counties in this state. So we're not alone in really trying to tackle this significant and pervasive problem. What we did as preliminary step is brought together a group of collaboratives within our community, both in the public and private sector, to start looking at how do we begin this approach. And what our decision was is that we really didn't have good data with our preschool age children in this county that encompassed more than just low-income families. So that was our first priority. And you've already seen the slide that reflects what we've been finding in that preschool community. After having gone into multiple preschools and weighed and measured over 600 3 to 5 year olds in our community, we're already seeing that 30% of our preschoolers are at risk for overweight or overweight already. It's a huge number. What we don't understand is why that number is significantly higher in our South County area, and that's really going to be our next step as a collaborative, is trying to zero in on what's happening in South County that's really driving those numbers to be higher. The second program that we have in the health department dealing with this issue is actually a one-to-one individualized counseling program, which I provide the service for, and what it is providing medical nutrition therapy for families who have children who are significantly overweight. This particular program is only eligible to children who receive full scope Medi-Cal. Medi-Cal allocates our department to provide 90 minutes of nutrition assessment for that family. That's 90 minutes of my time with them, and then an additional 6 hours of therapy time. So total, we're looking at 7.5 hours approximately of time to deal with an issue that is so extreme, there's no way you can even begin to kind of peel back some of the layers of what's happening within that family. Currently, the children I see range in age from 4 to 16 as a part of that practice. All of these children have BMIs that are greater than the 97th percentile. So not only are they overweight, they are significantly overweight. And what is happening is the families are feeling frustrated. It's such a huge problem to deal with at this point. Many of them fall out of the program because they can't even contend with how to begin the process. They feel overwhelmed and at a loss. The degree of difficulty is extreme, and you know, our real question is, how do we get these kids before they are already at this level of overweight? Thank you.
I'm Judy Stevens, the Director of Food Services at Lucia Marr School District, and I'm going to be addressing the school wellness policy. But one thing that I wanted to bring up is that, as you're probably aware, because it's in the media all the time, about that schools are one of the big causes of obesity among the young population. And what I want to point out is that we are but one aspect of a child's life. And schools have been, for quite some time, been making improvements on school nutrition. We've gotten rid of the sodas, which is a big improvement. We also are emphasizing the fresh fruits and vegetables. And as you can see in the picture, that salad bar is actually from one of our high schools. It's at Napoma High School. We have salad bars at all of our elementary schools and our high schools, a lot of fresh fruits and vegetables. One of the big problems, though, is that kids are not educated in that. You know, their homes and TV and all of their friends are emphasizing other kinds of foods, so we can only do so much. We really need a comprehensive approach. And this is kind of what started the school wellness policy, the need for the school wellness policies. You probably heard something about it. In fact, I think it was in our media just last night from Santa Maria, what they're doing. The USDA, who runs the school lunch program, has required anyone under the National School Lunch Program, any school district, to come up with a school wellness program that is adopted by their school board by this coming July. And happy to report that Lucia Marr is, we already have finished our final draft, ready to go to the board. And I know that other school districts in the county are working towards that goal too. So as they had stated on TV last night, I think that schools are scrambling to get this together. I don't think this is really the problem of getting the policy together. It's actually how we're gonna implement it. But what the wellness policy requires that you have a committee, a wide representation of people in there. They want to have school food service professionals. They want to have nursing, school board members, members of the public, students, parents, and we have a really good committee. We've made a lot of progress in our district, and that's been a real good cooperative that we have in the schools to try to come up with these policies. Basically, what the all of the policies need to address is that the school meals under the National School Lunch Program have to either meet or exceed the requirements set by the USDA and the state, which is basically a number of calories per age group and less than 30% fat is kind of what it is in a nutshell. It also addresses the need for nutrition education in the classroom, for the requirement for nutrition education in the classrooms, physical education at all grade levels, foods available for sale not only by food services, but also by fundraisers. A lot of the ASBs and different clubs sell foods on campus. So the policy must address what is allowed to be sold in that. And also what foods are available in the classrooms for parties and incentives. A lot of schools will give candy out for cleaning up the playground and that sort of thing, which doesn't sound bad except when you're getting it six times a day from different sources, it can be a problem. So that's something we have to address. There are a lot of challenges to fulfilling this. The first step is creating the policy and having the board adopt it, which is actually the easy part. One of the hardest parts that I think all school districts are seeing is the requirement to have nutrition education in the classroom. Because as you all know, the school curriculum are so heavily weighted towards teaching to the test. They're just overwhelmed. And there isn't more time to fit something else in, so they have to get creative on how to fit in more nutrition education in the classroom. Also, there's a need for teacher training in nutrition education and in physical education, because some of these teachers that are required to teach it, that may not be their specialty. And that, again, is a funding problem and a time problem in schools. We'll need to have more educational materials that are readily available so the teachers don't have to create it and so we can have a consistent message. Two of the things that I think are the most important are a need for parental awareness and community awareness of what good nutrition is and what children need or what anybody needs to maintain a healthy weight. And one of the biggest things that we face in food services and anybody else that is trying to sell food on campus is a student buy-in. You know, they like their sodas. You know, they like to be able to have, you know, the candy and all the treats and the fast foods at school. So how do we give them the food that they need and have them want to take it and understand why? So there again, the educational levels. There's also fears of revenue losses because food services being an independent budget, self-funded department, and also the school organizations like ASB are scrambling to make money to meet their needs because the funding is so short from the state. So all of these fears are challenges we're facing to actually implementation of this. But I think the two most important things are the parental education and the student buy-ins, because until we get them to understand what they need to do and we get them to commit to improvement, it doesn't really matter that we have a wellness policy. And I've been working closely with this San Luis Nutrition Group, and we've come up with some really good ideas about coordination, and we all are kind of on the same page as to what we need. But what we really see that we need from the county to improve our county statistics is a consistent, legitimate message about nutrition and fitness, because there's so many fad diets out there, so much misinformation that the public doesn't know how to sort it out. And if we had some kind of a clearinghouse that was a source of legitimate information, so we're all on the same page, it would really help get the right message out to the families. And also coordinated media releases too, because a lot of times sensationalism will take over what's in the media rather than the correct information. So I think education is the bottom line on it, and it is something that is a real challenge, and I think we need to all work together to succeed at that. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to bring this to conclusion. One area that we are asking the board to do is have staff bring back a report on the economic viability and the viability of putting together a comprehensive worksite wellness program for county employees. Worksite wellness is an investment in the people who work here and their families, and the county is a significant employer in the county. However, it's not just a good feeling kind of thing to do. A review of 42 published studies on worksite health promotion programs show that you get a 28% reduction in sick leave, you get a 26% reduction in health costs, you reduce your workers' compensation and disability management claims costs, which is why risk management is in the audience today. And for every dollar you spend, you get significant savings. In this study, it was $5.93. Now, we're not ready to bring a bar as part of this next year's budget for 06-07, but we would like to put that together over the next 4 to 6 months. The first thing that we were really trying to do was to bring an awareness of the obesity epidemic to you so that you do understand it, so you do look for ways to fit it into planning decisions, parks and rec decisions, and health decisions. One of the issues is how comprehensive a strategy is going to take to countervene the environment that we live in that has huge changes in our economy and our environment. The physical labor that people used to do, the available cheap carbohydrate calories that are available, the computer screens that are so attractive make us think that we're getting a lot of action when we're just sitting on our pot bellies. So we would like to put together, in the board letter, we have a number of suggested task force members. We have a preventive health grant proposal in because it is a large undertaking, no pun intended, to bring forward this number of organizations. In reality, a countywide task force would be, I believe, smaller than this. We would invite all these people and probably not everybody would attend, but certainly we need the participation of the appropriate county departments, and they would definitely include the county parks. They'd include risk management. They'd include the planning department. And so finally, also direct staff to evaluate the viability and cost effectiveness of an employee wellness program with a focus on improving nutrition and increasing physical activity. My model for this was Ventura's county wellness program. They've had a program going for 18 years that has been extremely successful. So with that, be happy to take questions and hear public comment.
Supervisor Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Thomas, well, first just a comment to everybody participating in this. I think there is a growing awareness in our community about the problems of obesity, and it is interconnected with lack of physical activity and diet, nutrition. And as you all know, we did adopt SMART Growth Principles this past year, which takes a critical look at our community design and hopefully will provide opportunities for people to get more physical activity. And just this morning, we passed a resolution recognizing the Central Coast Ag Network, who is putting emphasis on locally grown food and the value of having fresh food and the nutritious benefits of that. So I think we're coming together finally. I think there is a growing public awareness, and the timing is good, and thank you for your efforts. Dr. Thomas, you mentioned the wellness program for the county, and I'm very supportive of that. I think there's good reason that we ought to be doing that. My biggest concern is that we're not coming back for a year and a half with a budget proposal to implement this program, and I just heard you mention 4 to 5 months, and I'm wondering if there isn't a way that maybe we can move it forward on a timetable that doesn't wait a year and a half to actually implement it.
If the board would like me to bring back a proposal sooner than that, mid-year, I'd be happy to do that.
Allow me to go to the public at this time. Eric Greening, and that's the only request to speak on this item.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and I very much appreciate the report and the people that came to give it. And certainly, I think also the task force, we should invite SLOCOG, the Bike Committee, and the Trails Committee. Walkable communities, bicyclable communities, communities that feel safe and are safe for getting around, that are planned for getting around that way, not just for recreation where you make time to go recreate, but for normal everyday transportation where that becomes the routine way to travel whenever it's a distance. And weather that is manageable for that type of travel will be critical to this strategy. And I definitely hope that the planning department will be very, very much involved. I hope you will be aware of this every time you're conditioning a project, every time you're looking at a circulation element, when you review the parks and recreation element, and in your work as part of SLOCOG doing transportation planning. There may be more going on here than meets the eye that may need further research. It's quite alarming to see the spike among preschoolers, and particularly in the South County. And I'm wondering if, since most of the lifestyle factors of diet and exercise and so on haven't kicked in very much by that age, if there is something in our physical environment that is changing and may be changing more in the South County than elsewhere. As you know, we get exposed to more and more chemicals all the time involuntarily. They lodge in our body. Most of them have not been researched as to what they do individually or synergistically. One whole area that I would hope we would find a way to investigate, and whether it's the we locally or whatever, but I think we have grounds for a pilot project, is fetal exposure to endocrine disruptors. First of all, is it greater in the South County, and is it connected with this huge spike in preschool obesity? So there are definitely further things to research. But in the meantime, let's at least do the obvious, and particularly when it comes to making transportation that burns calories safe, attractive, and usable on a daily basis. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brink. Bring it back to the board for possible motion. We have item 1, 2, 3, Supervisor Lentol.
Yes, I'd also like to thank Dr. Thomas and his staff for doing the good work. I had to chuckle a little bit when he mentioned the pot-bellied pigs, and Amy was looking at me and not you. So I take that as a personal reminder that we all need to be part of the wellness program. What I think is important here, and to follow up on Supervisor Patterson's comment, is that there's a successful model in a program that's been in effect for 18 years in Ventura. I'm also very familiar with what the city of San Luis Obispo did. So categorically, the results are there. It's not that we need to study this more. It's just a question of how long would you need to put together the budget, the wherewithal, as far as the staffing, the plant, property, equipment, et cetera, to do this, because I don't want to rush this project forward. But I think Supervisor Patterson brought a good point. This is something that I'd like to see move faster rather than slower and wait until 07 or 08 just so it could fit into a budget category, to me is a missed opportunity here. So I'm asking you, Dr. Thomas, if you feel comfortable, what do you think would be a good return timeline based on what you know about the program right now?
I think we could bring back a proposal in July easily.
Okay, want to include that in your motion?
With that in my motion, I move that we move forward and bring us back in July.
Second.
Any further discussion?
Yes.
Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Clerk.
There were several recommendations. Are you approving? They have a
one,
set of recommendations, 1 and 2, and then they have a recommendation 1, 2, and 3.
Yes.
Are you doing all 5 of those?
We can.
Okay, that's
what
I wanted to make sure. That's fine. I just want to make sure it's in the motion. Okay.
I think it's second.
Yes.
Okay. With that, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Ayes have it. Next item, please.
Next item is item C3. This is a hearing to consider amending ordinance 3023, moratorium on the land application of treated sewage sludge biosolids from March 2nd, 2006 to February 28th, 2010, and find the ordinance consistent with the previously adopted negative declaration environmental determination number ED03149. Recommendation is for approval.
Mr. Batson?
I'm just a little bit out of breath. I'm just ran up the stairs and back down getting my exercise.
I can go to the public comment first if you would like me to.
I can do this. Supervisor Chad, you're a member of the board. My name is Kurt Batson. I'm the director of Department of Health.
I don't think your mic's on.
And my mic's on.
I'll get it right.
Okay,
Supervisor Shajan, members of the board. My name is Kurt Batson. I'm the Director of Environmental Health. And this afternoon, we're here to consider an amendment of the expiration date for Ordinance Number 3023, the moratorium on the land application of treated sewage sludge / biosolids. The recommendation of the Public Health Department is to amend the expiration date from March 2nd, 2006 to February 28th, 2010. And also to find the ordinance consistent with the previously adopted negative declaration, the environmental determination number ED03149. By way of history, on August 29, 2003, the Environmental Division of the Planning Department determined that the ordinance would not have a significant adverse impact on the environment, and a negative declaration was issued. On March 2nd, 2004, the Board of Supervisors approved Ordinance Number 3023, which is the moratorium on the land application of treated sewage sludge / biosolids. The moratorium established by the ordinance was to remain in effect until such time as a permanent ordinance regulating the land application of biosolids and exceptional quality biosolids was enacted by the Board, or 24 months from the enactment of the ordinance, whichever occurred first. Due to the prioritization of the mosquito abatement program and our response to West Nile virus, a permanent ordinance was not developed, and the ordinance will sunset on March 2nd, 2006. The purpose of the ordinance is to establish an interim moratorium on the land application of biosolids other than exceptional quality biosolids. Further, it's the intent of the moratorium to assure that the quantity of exceptional quality biosolids that's applied and distributed in San Luis Obispo County shall not exceed historic levels. The ordinance defines biosolids, exceptional quality biosolids, and persons regulated by the ordinance. It's to remain in effect for 48 months from its enactment or until a permanent ordinance is adopted, whichever occurs first. It requires notification of the Public Health Department, Environmental Health Services Division, 30 days prior to the land application of biosolids that exceeds or equals 5 cubic yards. It places a cap of 1,500 cubic yards on the cumulative total of exceptional quality biosolids that can be land applied in any 12-month period, beginning with the adoption of this ordinance. It also allows unused capacity to be carried over for a 12-month period. And biosolids, as used in this ordinance, excludes biosolids that are composted with other organic products, such as green waste, and sold in bulk form. Again, the recommendation of the Public Health Department is to amend the expiration date for Ordinance Number 3023, the moratorium on the land application of treated sewage sludge / biosolids, from March 2nd, 2006 to February 28th, 2010. And find the ordinance consistent with the previously adopted negative declaration, Environmental Determination Number ED03149. That concludes my presentation, and I'm available to answer any questions.
Any questions from board members or comments? Supervisor Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question of Mr. Batson. You made reference to the permanent ordinance, and what's the status of that? I know there was a task force formed originally to develop it, and then the interim ordinance came out of that effort. What are the efforts to move forward with the permanent ordinance?
Well, back when we first started working on that, we've actually have about two drafts into that permanent ordinance already. But when West Nile virus and the mosquito abatement issues came up, we just had to redirect our activities. So we have a couple of drafts of an ordinance that we had started back about almost 2 years ago now.
Yeah, do you have in your work plan plans or a timeline to go forward with the permanent adoption of an ordinance?
I don't have a specific timeline at this point, but we would hope to be able to accomplish that within this next 4 years.
Thank you.
Seeing no other person, go to the public at this time. And first speaker is Jesse Arnold, followed by Peter, is it Risky? Risley, sorry for the mispronunciation. Mr. Arnold?
Thank you, Chairman Ashaji and members of the board. My name is Jesse Arnold. I live in Cambria. I'm here to speak in favor of adopting this new ending date for the interim ordinance. I also would just like to say that our sludge in this county is of higher quality than in other counties. I want to see whoever's responsible to see that that is maintained, that we don't let the quality of our sludge deteriorate, and that's due to introduction of heavy metals and endocrine disruptors and other things into the sewage system that shouldn't be going there. And then county government needs to watch out that the counties that have a lot of sludge to get rid of and are looking to come to our county to get rid of it don't pull a fast one and have legislation passed at the state level saying, sorry, but we've just passed a new law and you people don't have any say in this. So I think we need to be alert and watch out for that. Thank you.
You're welcome. Peter, followed by David Dugan.
Honorable supervisors, this is a communication from the City Council of Morro Bay, written by the Honorable Mayor Janice Peters. The City Council of...
Would you please give us your name for the record?
Peter Risley.
Thank you, sir.
Sorry. The City Council of the City of Morro Bay unanimously supports a four-year extension of the interim moratorium ordinance on sewage sludge land application. We urge the board to do the same for the following reasons. First, any draft ordinance is subjected to the many required CEQA procedures and subsequent potential legal challenges. Less than 4 years is not realistic. Second, political, legislative, and legal battles are forming between industrial and agricultural counties as the urban areas seek new solutions to their sewage sludge disposal within the rural areas. SLO County is not immune to these pressures. Third, the interim ordinance limits are liberal enough to allow land application of sewage sludge containing heavy metal levels representative of sewage sludge historically applied to the land in SLO County. SLO County's needs are protected. Fourth, without the extended protection of the interim moratorium, sewage sludge with much higher levels of contamination could be land applied. SLO County will be vulnerable. Fifth, supporting the interim ordinance allows local jurisdictions like the City of Morro Bay to grow our current composting projects and work towards positive solutions. Thank you for voting to protect and preserve the quality of our land and our heritage. Sincerely, Janice Peters.
Thank you. Mr. Dugan, followed by Eric Greening.
Dave Dugan, Los Osos. We are again, I think we reached this once before. Sludge is bad. I think we all agree to that. Sludge, wastewater, biosolids. From what I understand, sludge is bad, and the adoption of this ordinance is a good thing. What the problem is that we continue to build sludge-making factories, such as the proposed MBR system in the middle of Los Osos. Now, if that Los Osos site was put in front of value engineering and all the other requirements that are now in place, that system would not be approved. We need to stop building these sludge-making factories and go to ponds. You don't have the same results. You got years and years and years before you have to do anything with the ponds. Ponds and wetlands are good. Sludge factories are bad. Sludge factories at Tri-W, Resource Park / Wastewater Treatment Facilities, is bad. We don't want that in Los Osos, and suppose nobody wants this sludge in this county, too. What we're going to be doing, if the Regional Water Quality Board has its way, is we're going to start shipping septic sludge to Santa Maria by the tons. That's more sludge going out of town that has to be processed, and what are they going to do with it? So I would say maybe there should be some kind of moratorium on building these sludge-making factories. Let's look at making ponds the preferred system of getting rid of our wastewater. If or somebody talked about the bad things that are in sludge and how it could affect people's health and stuff like that, and that is true. That's going to happen. If we're going to ship it through town in Los Osos, we have a chance of creating a health hazard there. And one final thing. This morning I heard a speaker speak towards this board as if there was supposed to be a poll or something to see if people appreciate this board. I'd say I appreciate this board. And then maybe I've come in here a few times and talked a little hotly towards you, but I give you a thumbs up. If anybody was to poll me, I would say, yes, you were doing a good job. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Greening, followed by Henrietta Groot.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and I certainly do recognize that making more sludge factories is probably not the best way to go, but I'd take an even more basic view of that. As perhaps something we can be working on during the next 4 years, that when you think about it, it's absolutely absurd to import fresh, clean water into our homes for the purpose of befouling and sending downstream. And I think we should start recognizing that we're not in the 20th century anymore, we're in the 21st, and maybe we can look at the old wisdom of finding waterless ways to handle this that can be safe and where we can develop ways to make them up to code. But in the meantime, I very, very strongly recommend that you take staff recommendation. This is definitely the way to go because it retains the numerical limits that protect this county from the large purveyors of much lower quality sludge. It's lower quality because they're big cities with a lot of industry, plating shops, gosh knows what. Those drains go into the same plants that household drains go into, and what comes out of it is not nice. And our next door neighbors in Kern County are getting an initiative on the ballot to completely ban all land application. They have been the dumping ground for much of metropolitan Southern California. Much of metropolitan Southern California is going to be looking for other dumping grounds for this extremely noxious stuff. Noxious enough that it has caused a public uprising in Kern County and led to this initiative effort. We have to maintain our defenses and not be vulnerable. And in this case, our defense is a numerical limit that essentially makes us unattractive to large purveyors with large quantities of this stuff to get rid of. So please do take the staff recommendation, and please do remember that when you do begin the effort or renew the effort of picking up on working on the permanent ordinance, you have invested a lot in bringing the members of the task force up to speed on a lot of issues, and I would hope you would not be afraid to draw on those folks again. Thank you.
Thank you. Mrs. Groot, followed by Bruce Keogh.
Good afternoon. My name is Henrietta Groot. I live in Cayucas. I want to speak out in favor of the extended moratorium, of course. I didn't pay that much attention to this so-called sludge situation up till now, until I read this book here, Garbage Land by Elizabeth Reut, on the secret trail of trash. And then I realized what sludge is. This morning when we talked about potbelly pigs, people were not afraid to use the word poop. What we're talking about here is human waste, but made worse by the addition of heavy metals. And yeah, I agree with previous speakers that our civilization has made a great mistake mixing clean, pure drinking water with human waste, and then in the sewers, other things are added to this. This author points out that sludge will travel a long way. New York sent its sludge all the way to Texas for quite a few years. And of course, the people there got ill and had respiratory problems and all that. So beware. Other urban areas will indeed look to this county to get rid of their problem. With respect to Los Osos, why don't we recommend composting toilets for all of Los Osos? Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Keogh, followed by Timothy Bollander.
Good afternoon. My name is Bruce Keogh, and I'm the Wastewater Division Manager for the City of Morro Bay. I'm here today to support the interim moratorium as your staff has recommended. I think it satisfies the numerous concerns of numerous groups within the county, and it provides some protection for us over the next 4 years. The interim moratorium, as recommended, also allows for the development of a composting project that we've been working on for the last few years at the City of Morro Bay Wastewater Treatment Plant. The results of that project have been a high-quality soil amendment that we have allowed the public to come and get and use for landscaping purposes. It's been very well received. I think it allows for the development of a sustainable alternative to the products that we have. Unlike many of the metropolitan communities to the south and to the north, I think our county is unique in its ability to manage the biosolids issue that's generated within our county, within this county, and I think we need to strive to develop those options so we don't end up doing what, you know, we're bad-mouthing LA and Orange County, but for many years we've been doing the same thing and sending our biosolids out of county. The last thing I would like to say is that I think that public education needs to be a continued priority, a very high priority for the county and the cities to educate people about really what's happening with their wastes as they're disposed of. Most people have no idea how a wastewater treatment plant operates. No, most people have no idea, you know, what really happens in the development of sludge, biosolids, and what the final end product is. I think we should strive to reinforce to people that they need to be very aware of what they put down their drain does impact the environment, and the more you can put down just, you know, the basic human waste products, the better. You shouldn't be dumping pharmaceuticals and paints and pesticides and all that stuff. And that's a very important process, I think, that County Health can help us with. Lastly, I'd like to say that if anybody is interested in taking a tour of our plant, where it's open pretty much any time that anybody wants to call, we have compost available. If people want to come look at either the composting facility or the plant, they can call 772-6274, and we'll arrange to get them through. Thank you.
Before you go, we have a question for you by Supervisor Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Keel, is Morro Bay using your green waste from the community, mixing that with biosolids? Exactly what are you doing to create your compost?
That's correct. We are taking green waste that's generated both by city operations, tree trimming, parks trimmings, and then we're also working with local arborists, and we're allowing them to bring their green waste to us, chip green waste to us for free, and then we mix that with biosolids in kind of have a recipe for doing that meets EPA requirements, and then composting that material.
Thank you. Mr. Bollander, followed by John Wallace.
Yes, my name is Tim Bollander. I'm a compost consultant. I live in Los Sosos. I was wondering if there's any way to project some photographs.
Sure.
Maybe Dr. Thomas can give you a hand.
Just what the doctor orders.
I'm here to talk about the beneficial use of composted sludge and how it could be used and how it could potentially save hundreds of thousands of dollars for the different communities in the county. I'm working on a project with Caltrans just outside of Cambria on Highway 46. What you're seeing here is the first area is a composted area, and the other area is a non-composted area. The second area was hydroseeded, meaning planted. The photograph was taken 5 weeks after there had been no rain. And so my point is that composted biosolid could be beneficially used to control stormwater and soil erosion on the side of roads in the county. I'm sure that a number of people going up the grade this winter has noticed that it's not always easy to control erosion on slopes. I've had really good success, zero soil erosion from my site, and quite a bit of erosion on erosion. Actually, EPA has just accepted compost as one of the best management practice for stormwater control and erosion control on roadsides. And Cal Poly has received a $1 million grant to study the use of compost for such application. The compost produced in Morro Bay was actually used in that experiment. So my work continues for another year on Highway 46, and if anybody has any questions.
Thank you.
Excuse me. No, but I'm glad you came, because I've been wondering why that demarcation, so thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Wallace, followed by David Broadwater.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. John Wallace, I'm the general manager and district engineer for the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. Our wastewater treatment plant serves the communities of Roy Grande, Grover Beach, and Oceano, and a small portion of the county. We ask the board continue to extend the moratorium ordinance as presented by staff. We believe that that will allow some further development of the permanent ordinance. We hope that that can be done within the four-year period of time that we're talking about. It also protects the South County plant in terms of protecting the amount of land application that we have historically had to do. We haven't done much of that recently because we've done some major improvements to the plant. Fact is, we will be spending over $1 million this year to further improve our solids handling processes there to even a better level. We're fortunate that we don't have some of the problems that other areas have, like Los Angeles, Orange County, because our watershed is virtually industry-free. We don't have a lot of generation of heavy metals in our watershed, and even if we were to have a user like that come in, we do have a strong pre-treatment program that would hopefully take care of those kinds of problems before they came to the plant. We believe that South County has been a model program for the use of biosolids, and we have coordinated, participated on the task force for over 6 years, and will continue to lend our support and our effort to help develop a permanent ordinance. We believe that one of the board's directions to staff some time ago when the recommendations came from the task force was that you develop a good public information program. And to that end, we believe that the health department has done a good job so far, but we would like to have that continue because there has been a lot of hyperbole about the issue. There's been a lot of misrepresentations about the issue. We wish that that health department and the other users and the or generators in the area can help to generate better information from the state EPA and the federal EPA. So in short, we would ask that the board proceed with the adoption of the of the extending of the ordinance for the next 4 years.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Broadwater, followed by Gwen Taylor.
With the consent of the board, if it's okay, Mr. Broadwater has agreed to switch places with me because I have another commitment.
And your name, sir, for the record?
My name is Bob Wolf. Is that all right?
No problem at all.
Thank you. My name is Bob Wolf. I'm the interim executive director of ECOSLOW, the Environmental Center of San Luis Obispo. And I'm speaking to you today on behalf of the board of directors of ECOSLOW, which is celebrating its 35th anniversary this year. And as you're probably aware, ECOSLOW pioneered recycling in this county starting in 1971 and has been an unwavering advocate for the environment of our beautiful and precious Central Coast throughout its existence. ECOSLOW also supports the staff recommendation that the Board of Supervisors extend this moratorium for a period of 4 more years. It was very prudent and conscientious of the board, in our opinion, to impose a 2-year moratorium in March 2004. It seems likely that an additional 2-year moratorium, while being a positive step, might not be enough time for the EHD and the county to finalize a permanent ordinance. Above all, we appreciate your efforts to protect our fine agricultural lands and the public health from the unpredictable dangers that could result from the application of large quantities of contaminated sewage sludge. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ms. Taylor, followed by Mr. Broadwater.
Good afternoon. My name is Gwen Taylor. I'm a resident of Los Osos. I would like to concur with Mr. Greening and what he promoted for the board to continue the 4-year extension of our protection of our communities by not allowing sludge application. Sludge application threatens the area's soil, our groundwater, the quality by extension of our food. We no longer live in a society that we can consider flush and forget. There are too many components in our sludge, too many components in what we flush down our toilets, that go into our systems, that must hopefully protect what is the sludge that goes on our lands. We can no longer allow sludge to be placed on our agricultural lands. We need to protect our food products, our food that we are eating, and our lands that produce that food. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Broadwater, followed by Joy Fitzhugh. You'll need some help with that. We'll call the doctor.
Call the doctor.
Is there a doctor in the house?
It takes a while to warm up. Why don't we bring Ms. Fitzhugh forward while Mr. Broadwater is having technical assistance there? Ms. Fitzhugh?
Thank you, Joy Fitzhugh. Decision was to ask the board to support the extension, the four-year extension on the moratorium. Thank you.
Are you ready, or Mr. Broadwater?
Yes,
followed by Andrew Christie.
I have a doctor to help me. My name is David Broadwater with the Center for Sludge Information. I'd like to direct your attention to the letter I already gave you dated today. Just a couple of points. On this chart here shows the interim moratorium annual limit of 1,500 cubic yards per year. And over the 6 years here from 97 to 2002, it shows the amounts that were generated in land applied in the county over the last 6 years, showing that this moratorium is flexible, liberal enough to allow historical amounts of sewage sludge to be land applied in the county, which is the intent of the ordinance. The second chart that's in that letter shows just a comparison, and I'll point out just one of them, which is lead, if that one can stay up there. Thank you, Dr. Thomas. San Luis Obispo County, two sewage sludge plants, over 97% of their sewage sludge has 200 parts per million of lead in it. Okay? The interim moratorium puts the maximum at 1.5 times that, at 300 parts per million. If we don't have this ordinance, sewage sludge with 840 parts per million would be allowed to be land applied. Many, many, much, much more lead per ton, per pound, than what we allow under this ordinance. So the ordinance has two basic components, that with the annual limit that's placed on what's allowed in sewage sludge and limits on some of the contaminants that are in sewage sludge. But of course, we're dealing with, and we're going to need to have a permanent ordinance at some time. I've sat on the task forces that have been commissioned by the Health Commission and by your board over a couple of years. And we're going to need to have a permanent ordinance based on the task force recommendations and your board's directions. And I look forward to that being accomplished sometime in the near future. I just, you know, finally want to say that I'm glad to be standing here with some of the most well-known environmental organizations in the county, some of the best-known agricultural organizations in the county, and now joined by a municipality and some of the representatives of sewage plants, you know, all standing together and asking you to extend this interim moratorium for 4 more years. And I appreciate your vote to do that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Christie, and that's the last request to speak on this item.
Good afternoon, Honorable Supervisors. I'm Andrew Christie. I am the chapter coordinator for the Sierra Club in San Luis Obispo County. The 1993 EPA land application rule that seeks to make sludge spreading more acceptable called it recycling, and sludge that met the U.S. land application standard was called biosolids. By identifying sludge as a fertilizer, it became exempt from several laws governing waste disposal. Current federal regulations have standards for only 9 pollutants. These land application regulations are the least protective of any in the industrialized world. The cumulative metal loading allowed under these rules results in contaminant levels an order of magnitude higher than those allowed under land application rules in most European countries, allowing for 2 tons of heavy metals dumped on an acre of land. Heavy metals persist for centuries in the environment once they are introduced. In 1997, the Cornell Waste Management Institute concluded that current regulations governing land application do not protect human health, agricultural productivity, and the environment. 6 years ago, the EPA Office of Inspector General concluded that due to lack of data and lack of oversight, the EPA cannot assure the public that current land application practices are protective of human health and the environment. For this reason, the Sierra Club opposes the land application of municipal sewage sludges as a fertilizer or soil amendment. We support a four-year extension of the county's interim moratorium ordinance as the minimum necessary time frame in which the county can fashion a permanent ordinance using science-based guidelines that are more protective than the severely deficient federal and state regulations. A 2001 paper on local ordinances published in Natural Resources Journal, number 40, volume 41, would provide you with a useful review of approaches taken by municipalities to address these local concerns. Thank you.
Thank you. Bring it back to the supervisors for comments and or a motion to move forward.
Supervisor Shadjian, I have one more I need to do for you.
Please,
one
Mr. Batson, my apologies.
The Health Commission has asked me to read this into the record, so I apologize for interrupting. It's a letter dated February 28th, Honorable Board of Supervisors. Dear Chair Asajian and member of the Board of Supervisors, I am writing to you on behalf of the Health Commission regarding Ordinance 3023, Moratorium on the Land Application of Treated Sewage Sludge / Biosolids Ordinance, due to expire on March 2nd, 2006. The members of the Health Commission that were present on February 6th voted unanimously to recommend extending the interim moratorium for another 4 years. The Commission also voted unanimously to recommend the Board of Supervisors look at a more permanent ordinance, either by transitioning this interim ordinance to permanent or begin developing the goals for the permanent ordinance within the next year. Thank you for taking the time to address this important issue. Sincerely, Lynn B. Enns, RN, Chairman of San Luis Obispo County Health Commission. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else, Mr. Bratson?
No.
Okay. Supervisor Patterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a quick question of staff. Mr. Batson, Mr. Keogh and Mr. Wallace both commented on the need to continue with public education and awareness of the issue of biosolids, basically. What activities now are the Public Health Department and others doing to educate the community about this issue?
Actually, we haven't been doing anything recently. In the past, we've had public presentations, and we have lots of brochures that we can have available now for people who ask, and we still have those brochures available not only in English but in Spanish. So when asked, we do provide those, but we aren't actively going out to the community at this point.
Might that be something that the task force looks into as they move forward with the adoption of a permanent ordinance?
Yes, I think so, yes.
Okay. I would, at this point, then, make a motion that we follow staff's recommendation to extend the moratorium of the land application of treated sewage sludge / biosolids from March 2nd, 2006 to February 28th, 2010. And that would be the motion. And then I have another comment.
There's waive the reading.
And waive the reading.
That's, yeah, second that motion.
Okay. Did you want to add anything else to that, Ms. Bianchi?
Yes. 2 years ago when Mr. Keogh from Morro Bay came to the board and invited people to come out to Morro Bay and review the composting project he had out there, we took him up on it, and it was fascinating. And I'm not a, how will I phrase it, a sewage sludge aficionado, but it was really interesting, and I would recommend to anyone that they make that appointment.
Interesting day. We have a motion by Supervisor Patterson, second by Supervisor Bianchi. Are we all clear on that, Madam Clerk?
I just am making sure that also included the consistency with the previously adopted negative DAC, that motion.
I would like to include that.
Say that again?
Staff recommendation on the negative declaration.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Second concurs. Roll call, please.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye. Would you present the next item, Madam Clerk?
Next item is item C4. It's a hearing to consider a resolution amending the Urban County of San Luis Obispo Program Year 2001, 2002, 2003, 2004, and 2005 action plans in order to reallocate community development block grant funds for the benefit of a new activity called the Mentone Storm Drain Project in the 3rd District. Recommendation is for approval. Instruct the chairperson to sign.
Move approval. Mr. Navarro.
Good afternoon, Chairman Ashajian, members of the board, ladies and gentlemen. Tony Navarro, Department of Planning and Building. And I'm here to present on behalf of the city of Grover Beach their request to reallocate about $412,000 of prior year community development block grant funds. And as you recall, this item was continued from the board agenda dated January 24th, awaiting the Department of U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development on their consideration and determination that the project the city was proposing was consistent with the federal regulations. We have received verbal assurance from the Department of Housing and Urban Development that the project is consistent with some minor changes. This interim city manager, Mr. John Dunn of the city of Grover Beach, and I feel confident enough to bring this before you today and recommend approval of the reallocation of prior year funds.
Thank you, Mr. Navarro. Seeing no questions or comments from supervisors, does anyone from the public wishes to comment on this item? I have no request to speak. Seeing none, bring it back. Supervisor Lentil.
Yes, I move that we recommend the adopt resolution for 2001, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Wait for reading. Move forward in the interest of time.
Second.
Okay, moved by Supervisor Lentil, seconded by Supervisor Bianchi. Roll call, please.
Mr. Lentil?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Ashajian?
Aye.
Thank you for the good work you've done on this, Tony.
Thank you.
Okay, so we have a request to take a short break since the item, but before we go on a break, probably entertain a motion to go past 5 o'clock because the amount of paper in front of me, we will be doing
so
that.
So moved. Second.
Moved and seconded by Supervisor Lentil and Supervisor Bianchi. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Yes.
Okay, it's 3:25, 21.
Who seconded that motion?
Ms. Bianchi did.
Who made the motion?
Mr. Lentil.
Thank you.
What can help?
Yeah. We should be back here by 3:40. Thank you.
Oh, come on. About 3:45.
We can give you an assist in the basketball tournament.
All right. 20 minutes.
Whatever 3:40 is. 19.
This came to your email this morning and I didn't know.
Yes. I have. Right. I have this speaky. I don't know if she has, but I do have it if you want to give. I'll give her mine.